Hello and welcome to the Majlis Ready for Your Freedom, Liberties, Current Affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Ready for Your Freedom, Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. As the coronavirus continues to spread across the region and governments continue to struggle to cope with it, along the way, countries in Central Asia have received millions of dollars in foreign aid to fight the pandemic. This is in addition to millions more which were directed from national resources to prevent the pandemic from spreading further, yet the region is currently going through an unprecedented spike. So where those resources have been going to? I mean, are they going where they're supposed to go? And the bottom line is, what level of transparency is there the way authorities are managing those resources? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Shamil Ibragimov, the executive director of Soros Foundation in Kyrgyzstan. Shamil is in Bishkek. Sholpan Aitanova, chair of the board of Zerto, a pro-transparency NGO and think tank in Kazakhstan. Sholpan is joining us from Almaty. Abdullah Ashurov, a TV presenter at Radio Free Europe Liberties Tajik service, locally known as Radio Azadi. Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi in Prague. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So COVID-19 cases are spiking across the region in Central Asia. In some countries, we know a little bit more than the others about what is happening and what the exact impact is. So this raises kind of a legitimate question that what's happening with millions of dollars that those countries have been receiving in foreign aid to fight the pandemic. So let's start with the amount of funding. Shamil, Kyrgyzstan must be one of those countries in Central Asia which often depends on foreign funding for almost anything. So on COVID-19, what level of funding it has been receiving from abroad?
Thank you, Mohammed. So by that time, there is a number of international financial institutions and developing agencies who announced their commitments of international aid to the country. And so far, just IMF, International Monetary Fund, they made a commitment of almost $242 million. The Asian Development Bank made a commitment for $94 million. The World Bank, $60.5 million. Asian Bank for Infrastructure and Investments, like $50 million. And Islamic Bank of Development, $15 million.
Wow.
And then we also have a big number, a bunch of other agencies who committed their aid, like, for example, European Union, nearly 32 million euro, where just 30 million is a direct support to the state budget. So roughly estimated, it is over $400 million that were committed to be granted to Kyrgyzstan.
Do you know, Shamil, how much of them already in the country?
Well, that's another question, how much been received and how it was actually used. I remember that in April, if I'm not mistaken, it was late 26th of March, if I'm not mistaken, Kyrgyzstan was the first country who got an approval of $120 million from IMF. And by early April, the country received this money. And then there was a big question, like, how these funds were actually used?
Yeah.
Shamil,
let's get into this a little bit later. First, I was kind of trying to do a reality check throughout the region, what the other countries have been receiving. So before I go to Kazakhstan, one more question to you, Shamil. I guess the type of help Kyrgyzstan has been receiving is not only money, right? But also some technical help was coming into the country?
Of course, what I mentioned is just the money that are received, not supposed to be received from IFIs, but beyond that, we have a great support from developing agencies like Open Society Foundations, for example, has already spent like nearly $500,000 just for the last couple of months, specifically focused on COVID crisis. And we have a number of other agencies, USAID, UN, European Union, and European Commission and many others who provide technical assistance as well.
Right.
And now, of course, we have some aid from China, from Turkey, from Russia.
Yeah, we will talk about that. So now Kazakhstan, Sholpan, but before getting into funding a question, I should also say a couple of words about your NGO, which is called Zerto, I guess. It's a think tank-based NGO with the collective experience in budget monitoring, investigative journalism, advocacy campaigns within government oversight institutions in civil society. I just wondered whether you guys are funded by the government.
No, we're not funding from government, so we're independent NGO. Mm-hmm. And so, coming back
so
to...
So on that question, so in comparison to Kyrgyzstan, Shulpan, I guess the foreign funding is not very much of a factor in Kazakhstan.
Did it receive anything at all? It less, but quite sound, for example. What I'm going to say, firstly, there are no aggregating information how many humanitarian aid coming to Kazakhstan. So we collected it in this week, and what we collected from open sources and mass media. Recently, in period between April and present, 12 countries have provided humanitarian assistance to Kazakhstan in different forms and volumes. Mm. And for example, we received humanitarian assistance from US, China, South Korea, Japan, Turkey, and etc. And it's about $3 million and 36 tons of cargo and 1,000 medicines and PPE. And for example, it was laptop for school children from Poland because we started distance learning. Is this information what we collected? There are no information from government, from accumulated or aggregated information, how many general come to Kazakhstan.
Right. I guess the authorities in your country have been also generous by putting their own checkbooks on the table, I guess, for the benefit of citizens, at least to an extent. How much money did they direct from its own resources to fight COVID-19?
It's about $1 billion. That's more than $1 billion what they allocated to fight COVID from national funds. Mm-hmm. And also Kazakhstan provided humanitarian aid to Kyrgyzstan and to Tajikistan. And in February, when epidemic had started, to China.
Right, right. And also keep that thought in your mind, like where those money were going to in Kazakhstan. I will get back to that question a little bit later. But now let me go to Uzbekistan and Tajikistan, and we are talking about the country, especially in Tajikistan's case. We did not know what was happening for a long time in Tajikistan, let alone the money they were receiving from abroad. So with who to start with? Abdullah, maybe Bruce? Tell us about what kind of fundings or help your country has been receiving from abroad in Tajikistan.
Since the beginning of the pandemic, Tajikistan has received more than $300 million from international organizations. These are grants and loans. Mm-hmm. Most of all, Tajikistan received from International Monetary Fund more than $189 million as a loan. Also, Asian Development Bank get Tajikistan $50 million. European Bank Development and Reconstructions also give Tajikistan $50 million as a grant. And generally, roughly, Tajikistan get about $300 million from all of international organizations and governments. Mm. But the authorities do not report how they spend these monies, and we are going to talk about that a little bit later,
Abdullah. So, Bruce, Uzbekistan, and of course, we shouldn't ignore rather a strange case of Turkmenistan. Tell us about the financial resources they have been directing or receiving from abroad to fight COVID-19.
Well, in the case of Turkmenistan, none, because they say they don't got it. I mean, they've been getting some assistance, you know, like they said, from the U.S. Embassy put out a statement several weeks ago saying that they had provided, I forget, around $1 million or something worth of aid or something to Turkmenistan to fight the pandemic. And then Turkmenistan denied they'd gotten any money from them. So it's hard to say. Uzbekistan, of course, is different. This is, in terms of population, this is the biggest country. So, I mean, they took in at least $1 billion in foreign aid, at least. The Asian Development Bank approved a $500 million loan for Uzbekistan at the end of June. European Bank for Reconstruction and Development approved $150 million in the middle of April. You know, so I mean, the World Bank was at least $95 million that they approved in April also. So, you know, they've been getting a lot of money. There's no doubt about it. And, but this, as is the problem with all the Central Asian countries, one, we don't know exactly how much of that money and equipment and aid and stuff has shown up. And two, it's such an opaque system of trying to track what happens to the stuff once it gets into the country. Certainly, if it's just money, it goes into the coffers of the government, and then no one's really sure, you know, especially with what's been happening lately, and Uzbekistan has been no exception, that they've seen all kinds of problems too, and people there are asking a question, if we got all this money, you know, then why is the problem so bad like it is? But, you know, like I said, Uzbekistan, well over $1 billion at this point.
Right. I will come to the tweet that you shared today about the doctors. It sounds like a very desperate situation there. So the most important question is, I guess, yes, every country on earth is fighting this pandemic to the teeth and nail and are directing all the resources available to stop the spread of the virus. But despite that, it looks like, from your comments, some countries have been setting aside some level of help for regions like Central Asia, but cases continue to rise in Central Asia despite all those help. So where those resources used, whether they are used the way where it was intended to? I guess in one of our earlier conversation, one of the activists raised her concern that a significant part of those fundings will disappear before even they get out of the capital. So what level of transparency is there the way authorities are managing those resources? Let's continue the podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by, from Bishkek, Shamil Ibrahimov, the Executive Director of Soros Foundation in Kyrgyzstan. From Almaty, Sholpan Aytenova, Chair of the Board, Zertu, which is a pro-transparency NGO and think tank in Kazakhstan. Currently in Prague, but originally from Tajikistan, Abdullah Ashurov, a TV presenter at Radio Free Radio Liberty's Tajik service, Radio Azadi, is with us, along with Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi, who is also in Prague. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the management of COVID-19-related financial resources in Central Asia. Welcome back, colleagues. So, as I was referring to earlier, you know, the region is kind of seeing serious spike in COVID-19 cases. I guess even if you rely on even official data, the tally is getting closer to 70,000 alone in Kazakhstan, I guess, although activists say the real number might be way higher. And there are serious questions about the data provided by Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, needless to mention Turkmenistan, which is still not sure whether to declare even a single COVID-19 case in the country. And yes, the health system of Kyrgyzstan has apparently overwhelmed. What we are seeing, like on the video that I've been looking yesterday, there are no beds in some hospitals. The COVID-19 related patients are sent back to their homes. So it, you know, it looks like the health system is in Kyrgyzstan is overwhelmed. Let's start with Shamil, with you. Tell us about the way the health system is coping with the situation currently.
Well, as you have already noticed, the health system in Kyrgyzstan is nearly collapsed because it's overloaded. All the medical facilities are overloaded. People losing their consciousness, and some people are even dying on the steps of hospitals because there is no space to take them. At least that used to be like several days ago. And just now, the government, municipalities, with the strong support of the civil society and local business community, start building new temporary facilities in cities and in the regions just now. And but the problem is that just building more spaces and placing more beds for COVID patients is just, you know, solving one bottleneck. But there is another bottleneck, the lack of healthcare providers, the medical servants. Many doctors got sick, and many doctors actually unfortunately died because of the fact that for all these months, there was no adequate provision of protection equipment, personal protection equipment for the medical servants. And as a result, it was obvious that many got sick and a number of died just for the last 10 days. They start engaging freshman students, like literally those who are like in their early 20s, to work And for the last 10 days, we have like two deaths of medical students. One girl was like 21 and one boy was like 25 years old. Though about the boy, it's still unclear. Either it was a suicide or it was a result of the COVID. Mm. So anyway, the situation is quite terrible.
So, you know, the way you are painting this picture, it looks like just a horrible situation out there. So it's been already a couple of months since the country, Kyrgyzstan and the other countries in Central Asia, kind of trying to cope with this situation. So there must be some experience that they could rely on. On the top of that, they are receiving all these millions that earlier you mentioned. So where the authorities were spending those millions, it looks like things are just getting worse there.
Okay, on 10th of July, Vice Prime Minister Erkin Nasrandiev, he made a kind of the press release report about how much money been received. So it's literally 1 week ago. And he reported that Kyrgyzstan by that time received $321 million.
Mm-hmm. Lots
and
of money.
The government has already spent by that time $173 million. Okay. So most of the money been spent for the public servant salaries, social payments, the social fund, and all this stuff. And I'm just reading this report, and there is no real investment for the COVID. There was no proper preparation to ensure that we have enough medical supplies, that we have enough medical equipment supplies in the country. Now, what you can see in the country, all over the country, is that some medicines cost like 10 times more than the retail cost. Hmm. Because of the deficit, this is the rule of the market, you know, and this is unfortunately happens here, that some people, they just sell it like for like 10 times more.
Right.
And this is the big question, like, yes, guys, you had 321 million received, 173 million, okay, been spent to fill the gaps of the budget. Hmm. And that's what been spent for. And by the, from the words of the Vice Prime Minister, $148 million is still on the accounts of the central department or whatever it's called, of the Ministry of Finance. Hmm. And it's not used. So the question is like, why nobody cares about efficient use of the funding? I mean, this is the crisis, the peak of, probably not the peak, but nearly the peak of the crisis now, and we need those money now, and it should be spent just at least to buy this medicine.
Shamil, I'm just wondering, I mean, the money that you say is still in the account of finance ministry there, how are you sure that the money is still there? I mean, we have huge issue with the corruption in Central Asia.
This is another good question. I don't know. I personally, as a citizen, I don't know. This is what been reported by the Vice Prime Minister. But at the same time, there are some, you know, rumors. Of course, that's just rumors. But that a big part of those funds being used to pay the debt of Kyrgyzstan to China. This
so
year
just,
and
to
the
just to clarify, the funding Kyrgyzstan received to fight COVID-19, and they are using it to repay debt to China?
I'm not making this statement. Okay. I'm saying that there are rumors about this.
Okay.
And the rumors are a result of the lack of information.
Right.
Because people do not have full picture.
Mm.
We don't know how this money been spent. And of course, people, they don't know. And of course, people can think like this way or another way.
Yeah.
I personally won't be surprised if the money that being received from the international community is actually spent to cover the deficit, to pay the debt to China, who are the biggest debitor of Kyrgyzstan,
right.
Like nearly 50% of our external debt is to China.
Right, right. Yeah, this all raises question about the transparency. So talking of transparency, Abdullah, we know that Tajikistan got financial help from some of the banks. I think you earlier mentioned that. So how much do you guys know as a journalist? How much people know the way authorities are using that money to fight COVID-19?
As I said before, authorities in Tajikistan do not report how they spend money. There is no transparency, and some financial organizations brought humanitarian aid to Tajikistan, such as medical masks, protective clothes for doctors. But users in social networks wrote that some of part of humanitarian aid was sold to doctors. And therefore, some international organizations and embassies brought humanitarian aid directly to the regions of the country and sent to doctors, but not to Ministry of Health of Tajikistan, because, as I understand, they don't believe to Ministry of Health in Tajikistan. That's why won't they get this humanitarian aid directly to doctors in regions. And also, we have one case in Tajikistan. For example, recently, users of social networks noticed that the flag of China was in Avesta Group's health boxes. Avesta Group, it is a very famous and big company in Tajikistan, affiliated to Rustam Emomali, son of President Rahmon. And Avesta Group announced that they help to doctors, and they get boxes, but users of social networks noticed the flag of China in these boxes, and they accused the Avesta Group of distributing humanitarian of China as of own, but Avesta Group after that said that their cargo was mixed with humanitarian aid from China.
Wow, very, very strange. Yeah, so, Sholvan, in your country, Kazakhstan, so far, our experience has been so far by studying COVID-19-related cases in Central Asia and the type of steps authorities have taken. Situation in Kazakhstan was relatively, I should say, kind of a little bit transparent compared to some other countries, at least in terms of we were able to get numbers, a number of fatalities, cases and regions and all this stuff. So in terms of the financial management, how much transparency is there in your country, the way they are managing those COVID-related funds to fight against it?
That's a good question. Yeah, we could say we have some kind of transparency about statistics, and because our government established a special website where accumulated and published everyday statistics, and today Kazakhstan Health Ministry confirmed about 69,000 cases, so it's increasing rapidly. Even we and our government in July reintroduced a new lockdown, 4-week lockdown until August. So even Kazakhstan has money and built 3 new hospitals in 3 biggest cities, and we should recognize so our government failed in to overcome this crisis, and pandemic continues to grip our country.
So was there any rule of mismanagement of funds in their failure?
It's a good question. It could be, because we should say there are lack of transparency. It's opaque, and there are no information how it's distributed, or provided information very aggregated, just like, for example, government say in July we allocated in additionally $3 billion from budget to fight COVID, but there are no detailed information how these resources has been spending. So it creates some ground for fraud and corruption. For example, if we come back to humanitarian aid, in our country, we have government-established state-owned company. They called SK Pharmacy. This company, it's like a national operator to purchase and distribute medicines, all medicines in our country. Right. And our government designated this company, state-owned company, to receive all humanitarian aid and distribute among country all companies, all medicine hospitals, and who needs. But this company too opaque, and there are no information how humanitarian aid is distributed. And we sent requests to access to information, how this information is distributed. And yesterday we received reply from SK Pharmacy, the state-owned company. They're going to organize, create website and put all information there. But we should say in our country, this crisis started in March, and we began to receive humanitarian aid since March, yeah? And there are questions, where is all this money, medicine, equipment?
Bruce, let me come to your tweet that you shared today, early in the morning, about what was that, about the medical stuff, and the authorities are asking them to sign consent that if they contract COVID-19 during their frontline duties, what was that? They will not blame the authorities for that? I mean, you said they have received like already way over $1 billion in foreign aid. Of course, they might also be spending some of their national resources to fight this. So what I'm saying is those funds doesn't look like being spent on right people who are responsible, who are in the front lines to fight this. I mean, earlier reports from our Uzbek service was that the doctors who were going to front lines to treat COVID-19 related patients, they were promised bonuses and they did not receive, at least not all of them received those bonuses. So what I'm saying is that those people are not really a beneficiary of whatever authorities are doing in terms of the spending COVID-19 related resources. So where those money is going or those resources are going in Uzbekistan?
Well, you know, that's a good question. Uzbekistan has been kind of tight with information, exactly. I mean, they're happy to, you know, certainly early on, for instance, every day you would hear reports about how many people had been, had recovered and were being released from the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they made a big deal out of that. They were much more quiet about how many people had gotten the virus or how many people had died. And the figures are still kind of not very convincing that are coming out of Uzbekistan because, again, it's the largest country by population in Central Asia. It has like almost twice as many people as Kazakhstan. And yet their cases are, you know, significantly less than Kazakhstan. But, you know, clearly you were talking about the medical workers that have to sign a consent, a release, a waiver, that if they contract the virus, that they won't sue the hospital or ask for any reparations or anything like that. You know, and this is kind of crazy. You know, before I get into the reason, I don't have to remind our guests that being in the medical profession in Central Asia is not a prestigious post. It's not like it is in the West where, you know, someone's a doctor and they make a lot of money and it's a guaranteed job and stuff. Medical workers in Central Asia don't get a huge amount of money. And that's why a lot of their most talented doctors are not in those countries anymore. Practice medicine even in places like Yemen where they can get more money, right?
Right.
You know, they have more than $1 billion worth of aid and probably twice that by now. They can't buy sufficient personal protective equipment, suits for these people.
Yeah.
You know, I would think that would be one of the first things you would want to invest money in is to protect your medical workers because everyone says they're the front line, but I mean, they really are. No one else can cure these people. No one else can help curb the spread as well as your medical staff. So they're the most valuable people you have in your country at this moment, and you should be taking care of them. Why are they signing consent forms that they won't sue if they get the virus? Why is the government so worried? If they'd given them the right protective equipment, this shouldn't really be that much of an issue. I mean, some people will still get it, but it shouldn't be so much. The unfortunate thing is, again, we don't know exactly how many medical people have been infected in Uzbekistan because they don't really report that information. Mm-hmm. Kazakhstan does, Kyrgyzstan does all the time. You know, but I would make the same argument for any of those countries, too, is, you know, when we're talking about the medical staff of these countries, we're talking about thousands of people, right?
Right.
You know, maybe a couple, 10 or 20,000, 30,000 or something like that. And they got all this money and these people still don't have the proper protective equipment. You know, I mean, come on. It looks bad, you know, and it has tragic consequences. That's the worst part about it.
Right, right. Anything to add on Turkmenistan?
Well, you know, again, I feel sorry for those people because their government sticks to that line that they simply don't have it. We have no idea what kind of protective equipment they got, you know, at all. I mean, they were burning wild rue a couple months ago. That was their big treatment. It would ward it off, you know, somehow or another, clean up the air. You can just imagine what it's like for some of those poor doctors to go in there. I mean, one of the central clinics in Ashgabat, I remember a story 6 or 7 months ago, they were bringing patients up the stairwell because the elevators didn't work. And you're telling me that they have the proper equipment to fight to contain, you know, coronavirus? No way. So I feel sorry for the doctors there. I can't even imagine. You know, everyone's pretty sure they have it. And what kind of outer garments the doctors have, protective clothing they have, you can only guess at, but it's probably not very much.
Right. Of course, you know, the doctors in the government clinics, hospital, they're not supposed to get fees. But again, to be able to get treatment from them, you have to pay way more compared to otherwise you would go to a private clinic. So there is a huge corruption issue with that. And also Turkmenistan is not getting help from anyone, Bruce. So how much preparedness is there in case of this thing is already in the country and Turkmenistan needs to fight against it?
Well, you know, I mean, I worked on a project that was looking at the healthcare system in Turkmenistan a couple of years ago. And the unfortunate thing is, it's very hard to say. The World Health Organization has probably the most information on it, but even that was clearly co-written with Turkmen officials, and there are serious gaps in their ability to identify, you know, illnesses, diseases, viruses that have been around for a long time, and understand at the scene that that's what they got, and communicate that to the central authorities in the capital that's going on. The chain of information is disrupted all over the place. So that just starting with that, you know, and then you get into what kind of medications and equipment they might have to deal with this, you know, and it's also clearly very primitive. They were diagnosing animals in one of the regions, and of course this is the veterinarian, but still zoological diseases, and this is a zoological disease, illness, you know, coronavirus. The doctors in the region where animals started dying diagnosed it as smallpox and warned the people, you know, the people thought that they might have smallpox. That doesn't even exist anymore. You know, it's not a disease that people get anymore. But this is how primitive it was that the doctors in Turkmenistan said that must be the cause, even though they eradicated that. So, like I said, the Turkmen government will tell you that they have everything they need, the most modern equipment. I'm sure they bought some of the most modern equipment. We heard they moved it to the hospitals that they showed the World Health Organization team that was just there.
Yeah.
But, you know, do people know how to use it? We don't know. You were the head of the Turkmen service when they took the X-ray of that guy in, I think, Lebap in Turkmenabad. Yeah. And the local doctor at the hospital couldn't read the X-ray, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a horrible situation there. But just very quickly, Bruce, we also need to be wrapping up the discussion about the World Health Organization. And they had a long visit to Turkmenistan, finally, and it concluded this week, and they had a press briefing. Did you learn anything new from what they said after their visit to Turkmenistan?
You know, I think a lot of people criticized that mission, and I understand why they did. But I think you had to read between the lines in what Catherine Smallwood, who was the head of that delegation, said. She made it clear that they went to sites that wanted to go visit, but that were pre-approved with the Turkmen authorities, meaning that they couldn't go anywhere they wanted to. They had to discuss it with the Turkmen government. They recommended that, although they had seen nothing to suggest that the coronavirus was there because the Turkmen officials were showing them, they recommended that Turkmenistan act as if the coronavirus was present in the country. They applauded them for some of the measures that they took to counter the virus, but some of them had been taken right before or during the visit of the delegation, like wearing masks and public.
Yeah.
So if you read between the lines, they basically said what the Turkmen government showed us and told us wouldn't indicate that they have the virus. But not, you know, they didn't have freedom of movement. They couldn't just go and check on anyone they want. And I think I got that message from the speech, was that we can't say for sure whether they got it or not. But based on what we've been shown and told by the Turkmen government,
right.
We don't have the evidence to show there really is coronavirus here.
Right. Yeah. The latest news is they have also closed mosques, I guess, and the local transportation, I mean, especially train. Anyway, so we need to wrap up the discussion. Let's a final note from all of you. Let's do this. So coming back to the issue of funding or the way the resources are managed to fight COVID-19, let's start with you, Shamil. So what are the areas you think that funds or the resources should be going to or should be directed in your country, in Kyrgyzstan, to fight this, and which has not been the case yet?
Since we have this great shortage of the medical supplies, I believe that the government should allocate resources immediately to fill this gap of the medical supplies. And
especially what, Shamil? You said there's a shortage of medical supplies. Is there anything specific you would like to mention within the list of medical supplies that the country is in short
we
of?
We are preparing this list of the medicines, because most of them, the anticoagulants and a number of other medicines, there is a specific list. Of course, that may vary, depends on the algorithm, etc. But what we definitely need is like to designed this to develop this list and fill this gap. That one thing. Another thing is like there is a still very weak coordination between the agencies, between government institutions in terms of the information campaign. Because even this is my personal assessment, I would say that one of the main reasons of the high mortality rate in the country is the because of the wrong algorithm of how we treat the disease. There have been so many biases, so many wrongs, and there was no proper coordination from the Ministry of Health to deliver very clear instructions, you know, that should be very adaptive. It should be constantly monitored and adjusted based on the research from other countries. And unfortunately, there is a lack of coordination in that sense as well. And of course, the government should invest more in creating more spaces. Well, now it seems like for the last several days, it start developing more or less. And what we definitely need is like, that doesn't really require any funding. But what we really need is to stop this pressure from the National Security Service, from the law enforcement bodies over the civic activists and medical servants. Because for the last months, there was a huge pressure on them when they were reporting that there is a lack of protective equipment and stuff like that. So, I mean, we have to completely change the approach. We have to unite in this fight. But what we see now is like that this is, again, my personal impression, but I see that there is more attempts to preserve the power rather than use this power to save people's lives. And this is the biggest problem.
Right. So, Shulpan, so in the face of this unprecedented sort of spike, and we are not yet still in the peak of this crisis, what kind of course correction is needed in your country, especially in terms of the management of those resources, those funds to fight this COVID-19?
I would say we, in my opinion, we don't have shortages of medical supplies, resources. We have shortages. We need to improve our state capacity to manage this crisis.
What do you mean by that?
I mean improve state capacity and way how to manage this crisis and how to use existing resources, because we have enough resources to overcome this problem. But mismanagement and attack, lack of transparency, and we don't know how to use it, and improving the efficiency and effectiveness of existing budget and humanitarian aid resources to better meet needs, because and it should be open and transparent by default. And when it's transparent, we know where our weaknesses, and where in which part of country and which kind of hospitals need equipment or medicines or drugs or etc. So there are lack of transparency and improving management, and there are, I couldn't say because it's not confirmed, but there could be ground for corruption. And transparency is only one way to fight corruption.
Right. You know, there is a corruption almost in every other aspect in Central Asia. So it would be unusual if there is no corruption here. It's a cynical view, but, you know, a fact of life in Central Asia. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up the discussion, Shulpan. I know there are a lot to talk about. Let me also give microphone briefly to Abdullah. So talking about your country, Tajikistan, as a journalist, what do you think, what type of course correction is needed in Tajikistan to fight COVID-19, especially talking of the management of resources there?
First of all, Tajikistan recognized the first case of infection of people to COVID-19 just on 13th of April. But some doctors and experts say that it was very late. The first case of COVID-19 was in Tajikistan much before. On March, we have some death case. And that's why the health experts advise to Tajikistan government to better manage health sector and increase the salary of doctors, because Tajikistani doctors have very small salary compared to other neighboring countries such as Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. For example, doctors in Tajikistan get about $70 per month. That's not enough.
Right. Okay, final word from Bruce, from you. So in terms of the course correction, yes, there are some recommendations to the local authorities, and there were some brilliant ones our speakers mentioned today. Just to flip the board here, what type of course correction would you advise to international funders so that the resources that they are providing to Central Asian countries are used the way it's supposed to be used?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me that one. I was going to throw in anyway that I think, to the greatest extent possible, international organizations should not only be prepared to hand over this aid, but hand it over to the end destination. Abdullah was talking a little while ago about them actually taking the stuff to the regions to make sure that it got there. And I think that's a great idea. It's hard to get around these days. You can't just go from one country to another without all kinds of special documents and everything that you don't have the virus. But it would be great if, to the best extent possible, these organizations would say, I'm bringing in masks, ventilators, PPE, whatever, and we're going to land, and then we're going to get on a smaller plane, and we're going to bring it right to this hospital, where these guys are, and hand it over. And with money, especially, if you're going to hand over money to these people, you really got to, I can't even imagine what kind of agreement you would really need, but there has to be some oversight where, you don't just give money and say, this is for, taking care of this one hospital, and please make sure the money's spent there. I mean, they need to document that money got there, that the improvements were made by whatever means, visual means, videotaping, things like that. But I mean, as much as possible so that everyone can see that the money that was targeted for a purpose actually went toward the purpose. And I know that's asking a lot. But these countries need the outside help, and if they're going to ask for outside help, they have to take it with the conditions these organizations put on them, which are not onerous, to make sure they're going to accompany this equipment to the site and help install it.
I was thinking to end the discussion right here, but you kind of brought us into point where I think Shamil might be able to add a couple of words here. Shamil, you guys are providing to some extent resources to Kyrgyz government, so how you make sure that those resources are used properly?
Mohammed, there is, I should make a disclaimer that we do not provide any support to the government.
No, you
we
said,
work
you
with
said,
civil society.
Oh, okay, maybe that's the one, that's one way to go. Yeah, please tell us.
So for us, our mission is to focus more on to support the efforts of the civil society, and we work in collaboration with the government, but we do not provide any direct support or any direct funding to the government institutions for several reasons. One of the obvious is that, yes, there is a lack of transparency, and our work is more like, right now what we witness is a tremendous raise of the civic activism, and actually all those developments, the positive developments that we are witnessing now in the country, is just the efforts of the civil society, unfortunately, because of the fact that people realize that, that they have to save themselves, without relying on the government. And we support those efforts. And I believe that this is a very legitimate question, like how the international institutions make sure that the aid they provide is really reach the beneficiaries. That's one thing. And another thing is, I believe that it is irresponsible to provide financial aid without any conditionality to the corrupted regimes. And international organizations and IFIs should be more responsible in that sense.
Right. Well, terrific. Thank you. Thank you very much. So with this, unfortunately, we have to conclude the podcast right here. So thank you very much, Shamil Ibrahimov, the Executive Director of Source Foundation in Kyrgyzstan, Sholpan Aitanova, Chair of the Board, Zertu, a pro-transparency NGO and think tank in Kazakhstan, Abdullah Ashurov, a TV presenter at Radio Free Europe Liberties Tajik Service Radio Azadi, who was joining us from Prague, along with Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty Central Asia, Blok Kishlok Owazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. So this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.